worldwide. If anyone has information about Salman Rauf Salman, please contact the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email lh@rewardsforjustice.net or the regional security officer at the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McLean. U.S. President Donald Trump has sparked a new political fight with American Jews by suggesting they show great disloyalty by voting for opposition Democrats. U.S. Jews for decades have overwhelmingly voted for Democratic presidential candidates over their Republican challengers, including Mr. Trump, even as he won the presidency in 2016. But Trump Tuesday attacked Jewish people who vote for Democrats, saying they are showing either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty. As the group of seven summit leaders prepare to meet this weekend, U.S. President Trump is calling for Russia to be welcomed back into the group. Moscow was booted from it over its unilateral 2014 annexation of the peninsula, which did not, the Crimean Peninsula, which did not seem to matter much to Mr. Trump when he made the statement on Wednesday. The White House says that Trump and French President Emmanuel Macron agreed that Russia should be invited to the 2020 G7 meeting when Mr. Trump is hosting it in the United States. President Trump says he canceled a planned trip to Denmark because he didn't like the way the Danish prime minister described the suggestion of the United States buying Greenland. As VOA's Steve Herman reports, Trump said he felt Danish prime minister characterizing the idea as absurd was an insult to the United States.
Speaking to reporters on the White House South Lawn, President Trump said he did not like having his idea to buy Greenland being called absurd by Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen.
She's talking to the United States of America. You don't talk to the United States that way, at least under me.
Trump had planned to visit Denmark early next month, flying there from Poland. He had been formally invited by the Danish Queen. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
And this is VOA News. In a move almost certain to trigger a new court fight, the Department of Homeland Security is moving to end a long-standing federal court agreement that limits how long immigrant children can be kept in detention. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
Acting Secretary of Homeland Security Kevin McAleenan says removing the 20-day limit on family detention would close a loophole that he says encourages people to cross the border illegally.
The new rule will protect children by reducing incentives for adults, including human smugglers, to exploit minors in the dangerous journey to our border, using them to beat the system and be released into the United States.
But Clara Long of Human Rights Watch says the administration has
provided no evidence that detaining children indefinitely will change the calculations that people who are fleeing for their lives are making.
And she warns that prolonged detention can traumatize children. Ben Thomas, Washington.
The UN humanitarian operation in Yemen is rapidly running out of money and will soon have to reduce food rations to 12 million people and shutter life-saving programs if donors do not make good on pledges. Only three of the UN's 34 major humanitarian programs in Yemen are funded for this year. The UN Secretary General will travel to the epicenter of Ebola outbreaks in the Democratic Republic of Congo next week. VOA's Margaret Bashir.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres plans to visit the country for 3 days, arriving August 31st. His spokesman, Stéphane Dujarric, told reporters that Guterres wants to assess the situation and mobilize additional support for the response.
In the province of North Kivu, he is scheduled to meet with Ebola survivors and health workers during a visit to an Ebola treatment center.
He will also meet with Congolese President Félix Tshisekedi in the capital, Kinshasa. In July, the WHO declared the Ebola outbreak to be a public health emergency of international concern. The majority of cases have been concentrated in North Kivu and Ituri provinces in the country's northeast, but cases have emerged in other parts of the country. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
China confirmed Wednesday that a local employee of Britain's Hong Kong consulate has been held under a 15-day administrative detention because of allegations of violating local laws. The 28-year-old staffer, Simon Ching, was allegedly arrested by police on the night of August 8th while traveling back from a U.S. trip to the neighboring city. His family said in a Facebook post hours before China's official confirmation, his girlfriend told Hong Kong media that the last text message she received from him was that after getting off the high-speed rail, he was going through the customs at the West Terminus. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 22nd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's president orders the army to use necessary force to stop protesters from shutting down the country's borders and airports.
What the president is stopping is violation of our borders. So if you intend to violate the borders of Malawi in the name of the constitution, then you have a problem with the commander-in-chief.
Sudan's new prime minister talks about his priorities after being sworn in. Recent rights abuses in Zimbabwe may dent hopes to lift sanctions. United Nations Secretary General will travel next week to the epic center of the Ebola outbreak in the DRC. And Liberian President George Weah says fighting violence against women is one of the top priorities of his government.
Women issue is our issue. I just signed a domestic violence bill to tell you that we support our women's rights and we all have to reinforce. So I need your ideas what to do so we all can work together to see how women can be protected.
And women's basketball is gaining popularity in Africa. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi President Peter Mutharika has ordered the army to use necessary force to stop protesters from shutting down the country's borders and airports. Two opposition parties and the Malawi Human Rights Defenders Coalition have been holding protests to demand the resignation of Elections Commission Chairperson Jane Ansa for presiding over the disputed May 21, 2019 general election. The protesters say they will shut down Malawi's airports and borders from August 26 to the 30th. But President Mutharika, speaking Wednesday, said any attack on the country's borders and airports would be treated as treason. He has ordered the military and police to stop the demonstrators. Ngemi Kalilani is the spokesperson for President Mutharika.
What is essentially the president was saying today is to remind all that as an individual and as a Democrat, he understands that there is a right to demonstrate in the Constitution of the Republic of Malawi. But he was explaining to say the same provision that provides for the right to demonstrate expressly states that the demonstration shall be peaceful. The colleagues that have been organizing the demonstrations, they have made statements that they now intend to take those demonstrations to the borders that define our country as Malawi and to the international airport. Now, the president was addressing that threat to say as much as he respects the right for citizens of this country to demonstrate, he would not respect demonstrations that are expressly aimed at disturbing the borders. The organizers are saying, which they have said on record, that they are organizing demonstrations that will aim at disturbing the borders and the international airport. So the president said, if that is the intention of the organizers, as commander-in-chief of the armed forces in Malawi, he is directing the army and the police to make sure that there is no disturbance whatsoever of the borders of the country.
When the president says that any attack on our borders or airports will be treated as treason, he's therefore directing the police and army to stop the demonstrations. Should they go ahead, let them not say that they were not warned. In reality, yes. The president is telling the protesters not to go and protest.
No. It has to be understood in the proper context. The president is not stopping demonstrations per se, because demonstrations are provided for in the Constitution. What the president is stopping is violation of our borders. So if you intend to violate the borders of Malawi in the name of demonstration, then you have a problem with the commander-in-chief, who is entrusted under the Constitution to protect the borders of the country. So the president said, fine, I understand you have the right to demonstrate. However, I understand that that right is conditional with the provision that you have to demonstrate peacefully. That if the intention is what you have said, that you intend to disturb our borders in the name of demonstrations, then as the commander-in-chief, I have a responsibility to protect the integrity of the country. And then I'm directing the army, who are constitutionally empowered, to make sure they protect the integrity of the country.
I don't know how it's done. I don't know about you, but I think the military belongs on the battlefield. So if you put the military against civilians who are protesting, don't you think that's a recipe for danger?
Yes, that's why the president said that those people that choose to evade our boundaries, doesn't matter whether they're Malawian or other nations, but if you make a choice to evade the national borders of the Malawi Republic, then you are declaring war on the people of Malawi and the Republic. And you need the force of the military, which is constitutionally empowered to protect the borders. That's what the president said.
Thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you always.
Thank you, my brother.
Ngemi Kalilani is spokesperson for Malawi President Peter Mutharika. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Liberian President George Weah says fighting violence against women is one of the top priorities of his government. He spoke Wednesday after hundreds of women protested in front of his office to decry rising violence against women in the country, particularly political and domestic violence. Moses Gazia Wood reports from Monrovia.
Even a heavy tropical downpour did not discourage the women from delivering a special message to President George Weah and his government. The women, young, middle-aged and old, came from different sectors of the Liberian society, carrying placards with different inscriptions or calling on the government to take action in ending violence against women in Liberia. The women threw themselves face down on the ground, all hungry and angered, to present a special petition to President George Weah and his government. After hours of waiting and chanting under the heaven downpour, they presented their petition to President George Weah, the man who called himself Liberia's chief feminist. Reading the petition on behalf of the women, Mabendun Herod called the president's attention to the violence, including physical assault and online bullying meted out against women candidates in the recent by-elections.
The physical and verbal assaults of aspiring female political candidates and their supporters in the District 13, November 2018, and District 15, August 2019 representative elections, and the online bullying during the recent 2019 most Colorado senatorial elections were not only unpatriotic, but demonstrated the lack of respect to women who sought to positively contribute to the nation through their participation in the electoral process.
They also expressed fear about the rise in violence against women in Liberia based on the cases reported per quarter.
In the six-month period of December 2018 to July 2019, there were 2,021 reported cases of sexual and gender-based violence in Monserrado alone. Based on this trend, by December 2019, this number can be expected to far exceed.
The women call on President Weah to investigate law enforcement personnel who were present at the scene of the recent election-related violent incident but did not intervene. President George Weah assured the protesting women that women issues were top priority under his government.
Women issues is our issue. I just signed a domestic violence bill to tell you that I'm in support of women's rights, and we all had to reinforce. So I need your ideas what to do so we all can work together to see how women can be protected. The law will be enforced to make sure that women's rights are fostered and we protect our women.
President Weah assured the women that there would be no recurrence of the recent violence, such as in District 15, Monserrado County by-elections against opposition candidate Tele Ure.
As a feminine chief, All citizens should be protected under the law. In election violence, we all condemn election violence, and we're going to make sure that District 15 be our special government assigned place where we will protect the area so we can have free and fair elections.
Liberia holds one of the highest rates of domestic violence issues in the West African sub-region, ranging from sexual and physical abuse of women and girls. Recently, the legislature passed the country's first domestic violence law, signed by President George Weah. For VOA News, this is Moses Gazil reporting from Monrovia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 22nd. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Sudan's new Prime Minister, Abdalla Hamdok, was sworn in Wednesday along with the country's 11-member Transitional Sovereign Council. Reporter Namba Muhyiddin in Khartoum says Hamdok addressed the media soon after taking the oath of office and promised to focus on dealing with Sudan's economic crisis that fueled the protests leading to the removal of President Omar al-Bashir.
Actually, he says he will implement urgent solutions for the acute economic crisis in the country by building a strong economy that is reliable on Sudan's abundant resources, not on the gifts or loans, and not on the ideological but pragmatic programs, and to open the door for the international community and to enhance the image of Sudan that has been printed in mind by the former regime ideological loyalties.
Some of the parties in the Sovereign Council have authority to name and support candidates for cabinet. What are some of the powers of the new prime minister?
The prime minister has the authority to appoint whoever is qualified and to exclude anyone doesn't meet criteria required to save the current situation. And he mentioned this in his speech. He said that he will take a look on the names and might return it if it's not qualified enough.
How is the new Sovereign Council being received by the people in Sudan?
People were celebrating ending of the turmoil and the delay that was tensioning the situation in the country, but also they raised eyebrows as the generals who are in the TMC, all of them right now in the Sovereign Council. But also people put great hopes that even with this imposed reality, they can do something during the transitional period among the transitional institutions that will be formed by the civilian government.
As you mentioned, the prime minister has some extensive international connections. One of the issues that will be facing the new government in Sudan will be what to do about, say, United States sanctions against Sudan that were put there because of the former President Bashir. So do you think the new prime minister will use his connections to get these sanctions removed?
Yes, actually, people think the prime minister will use his connections, and the government also, that made up of the only qualified individuals, will use the connections. And this is why protesters were so defined that no political parties will be involved in the minister's council and the sovereign council. So I think, yes, he will use it, and he will promote for a better image of Sudan by promoting the program speech, not the ideological thoughts that has been controlling the image of Sudan for decades. So we think that the priority for the next few months will be about enhancing the image of Sudan and strengthening the ties between the countries so we get support of the international community.
Women play a role during the protest. Do you think women were rewarded in the new government?
Yes, and this is what the prime minister also assured, that women in the new government, this is their place, not a gift from men. And this was actually very good news that in the Sovereign Council there was a woman, one Christian woman, one professor, name is Aisha Musa, and also the chief of justice is Nemat Kuku. So this is a delayed victory for women being in the Sovereign Council, and also we are expecting them in the Minister's Council.
Namba, thank you very much for speaking with us again.
Thank you, James.
House reporter Namba Muhyiddin speaking with us from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Activists and the main opposition party in Zimbabwe said the country is not ready for the end of U.S. and European Union sanctions, accusing the government of continued human rights violations. As Colombo's Mavunga reports from Harare, President Emmerson Mnangagwa's sympathizers say lifting sanctions will help the country's ailing economy.
Tatenda Mumbearara, the leader of the activist group Citizens Manifesto, is recovering in a private hospital after he was abducted by about 10 armed men whom he suspects are members of the security forces. Mumbearara opposes planned protests by regional leaders to demand the end of Western sanctions imposed on former President Robert Mugabe and his allies in 2002 for election rigging and human rights abuses. He says the recent crackdowns by security forces on protesters and a spate of abductions show that Zimbabwe's rights record hasn't improved.
So it would be wrong for anybody, any institution, or any progressive people to have, you know, the sanctions removed on the falsehood that human rights situation has improved in Zimbabwe, because the reality is that actually they have worsened. We are in a far, far much worse situation. So if we got sanctions because of human rights abuses, what could actually be happening or should be happening is tightening of those sanctions.
Rachel Kamangira, a member of a pro-government group called Broad Coalition Against Sanctions, has the opposite view. Since February, Kamangira and members of her group have been camped outside the U.S. Embassy in Harare, demanding that the sanctions be lifted.
Those targeted ones, if they get sick, they go somewhere like in other countries to get medications. Us, when we get sick, we don't have medications here. They were targeting our former president. Right now, he's no longer ruling this country. But the ones who are suffering are ordinary Zimbabweans.
The 43-year-old widow says that once the sanctions are lifted, the economy will improve and she will be able to find a job and send her three children to school. But Daniel Ntlela, a former economics professor at the University of Zimbabwe, says Harare first has to cut expenditures and deal with corruption before there can be any economic improvement. Sanctions, he says, have little to do with Zimbabwe's economic problems.
The idea is that if sanctions are lifted, we'll immediately have loans coming through. But that won't happen until we service the debts we owe to the IFIs, International Finance Institutions. The money we owe all around is not due to sanctions.
Zimbabwe has been mostly cut off from international loans and foreign investment since the early 2000s due to Mugabe's abuses and policies seen as unfavorable to outside companies. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres will travel next week to the epicenter of the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. As Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations, this is the worst Ebola outbreak that the DRC has recorded in 40 years.
The DRC is no stranger to periodic outbreaks of the Ebola virus, but this most recent epidemic has been the country's worst and continues to spread 1 year after it reappeared. The World Health Organization says the country has recorded more than 2,800 confirmed cases and at least 1,900 deaths from the virus, which spreads primarily through contact with the blood, body fluids, and tissues of infected fruit bats or monkeys. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres plans to visit the country for 3 days, arriving August 31st. His spokesman, Stéphane Dujarric, told reporters that Guterres wants to assess the situation and mobilize additional support for the response.
In the province of North Kivu, he is scheduled to meet with Ebola survivors and health workers during a visit to an Ebola treatment center.
He will also meet with Congolese President Félix Tshisekedi in the capital, Kinshasa. In July, the WHO declared the Ebola outbreak to be a public health emergency of international concern. The majority of cases have been concentrated in North Kivu and Ituri provinces in the country's northeast, but cases have emerged in other parts of the country. At least 3 cases were also confirmed in June in neighboring Uganda. The persons infected with the virus there had traveled from the DRC and had been in contact with a relative who died of Ebola. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The recent Afrobasket Women's Continent-wide Championships held in Senegal show the immense popularity not only of basketball in Africa, but specifically women's basketball, with 15,000 people attending the championship match between Senegal and Nigeria. It was the largest attendance for a basketball match ever in Africa. Joe Lopez, director of Seed Academy in Senegal, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the rising popularity of the sport among women.
Girls basketball has really grown on this continent. You see Nigeria played really well at the Africa Championship, at the Afrobasket, but you also saw them when they played at the World Cup, where they won two games. That was the first ever that an African team had won at that level. Of course, most of the players that play for Nigeria and some who play for Senegal do play and train in the United States and in Europe. Hence, their performance is always enhanced because the level of competition in those countries, the level of play is much higher.
The outlet for, you know, in places like the U.S. and Europe, where women, where girls get to develop their basketball talent is through public schools. Do you guys have an idea of how that would happen in a different way than it happens in the U.S.? I doubt you could use the same approach that the U.S. has.
You hit it spot on. Right. We cannot probably emulate what the U.S. has done, but we can take lesson. We can learn from it. You know, you cannot develop any kind of sport, not just basketball, without having an intercollegiate aspect of the sports. You know, I learned to play basketball in Senegal back in the 60s and 70s, and we had intercollegiate team. You know, I had a high school team that I played for, you know, and I competed against all the high school. We need to really think about restarting the intercollegiate, or maybe rather the inter-high school competition, to just give girls and young boys an opportunity to compete. We used to have that. We used to have that in Senegal. And we need to go back into the archives and, you know, start doing it again.
In Senegal, at least, when you talk about boys and men, you've got football, you've got wrestling. Those are the big sports. And then basketball is trying to compete with those other sports. With girls, you don't see them. They don't do wrestling as much. And then there's not as much in terms of soccer or football as well. So do you think basketball is uniquely poised with girls and women to become a popular sport?
You are really hitting spot on what seems to be the issue here, right? Girls basketball does not, I mean, in Senegal, does not compete with any other sports. I mean, in the U.S., you know, soccer, I mean, the women's soccer program is huge. Here, we don't have that issue. So basketball, like you said, is poised to really become a women's sport on this continent. And I keep talking about Seed because that's what I know and that's what I run here. We at Seed have begun to put a lot of emphasis on the girls program.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Liberian President George Weah says fighting violence against women is one of the top priorities of his government. He spoke Wednesday after hundreds of women protested in front of his office to decry rising violence against women in the country, particularly political and domestic violence. Malawi President Peter Mutharika has ordered the army to use necessary force to stop protesters from shutting down the country's borders and airports. Two opposition parties and the Malawi Human Rights Defenders Coalition have been holding protests to demand the resignation of Elections Commission Chairperson Jean Ansah for presiding over the disputed May 21, 2019 general election. The protesters say they will shut down Malawi's airports and borders from August 26 to the 30th. But President Mutharika, speaking Wednesday, said any attack on the country's borders and airports will be treated as treason. He has ordered the military and the police to stop the protesters. Sudan's new prime minister, Abdallah Hamdok, was sworn in Wednesday, along with the country's 11-member Transitional Sovereign Council. Hamdok addressed the media soon after taking the oath of office and promised to focus on dealing with Sudan's economic crisis that fueled the protests leading to the removal of President Omar al-Bashir. That is it for this Thursday, August 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the continent has seen a decline in the number of authoritarian regimes since the 80s, but still, the number of democracies.